Good evening. This is your radio almanac for February 23rd. This is Ash Wednesday, and yesterday, of course, was Shrove Tuesday or Mardi Gras, sometimes called Pancake Tuesday or Fat Tuesday. This is Orson Welles, sometimes called Fat Orson. Just saying hello before the show starts. There was a new moon about 7 o'clock tonight. What says our household hints department?
The taste of fish may be removed from pots and pans by rubbing with lemon rind. The taste of lemon rind may be removed from pots and pans by rubbing with fish.
Thank you, Prudence Pratt. Professor Frugelheiser?
Scientific information. Dew does not fall on the grass. It doesn't fall anyplace. Dew form.
Pardon?
Dew form.
Weather report. Here in California, it's been forming cats and dogs. Dr. Snake Oil?
Hot mustard poultices applied frequent will prevent a cold in the chest from getting up into the head. Now, to prevent a cold in the head from getting down to the chest, tie a knot in your neck.
We bid you welcome one and all to the sign of the Flying Red Horse.
Tonight and every week at the same time over these same stations, the makers of Mobil Gas and Mobil Oil bring you Orson Welles. Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to show you what took place a little earlier this evening at the stage door of the CBS Broadcasting Studio. A group of young ladies in bobby socks are gathered in the entranceway.
All right, girls, break it up. Move along now.
We're allowed to stand here.
Orson lets us.
Orson?
Yeah, Orson.
Orson Welles.
We're his fans. This is the Orson Welles phone club.
Okay, just make a little less noise.
He's a meanie.
When do you think Welles will be coming along?
His program's on the air any minute.
Aggie, what are you doing over there by Orson's car?
I'm patting his fender. Gee, Orson's got the most beautiful fenders in Beverly Hills.
Here he comes now. It's Welles.
Well, if it isn't the Orson Welles Swoon Club.
Yahoo!
My dear fans, I bid you welcome. Well, girls, what's the membership? What's the membership of the Orson Welles Swoon Club this week?
We lost two members.
What? You mean we're back to three again? Who'd we lose them to?
Bella Lugosi.
I see. Well, look here, I'll tell you what, as an added incentive, to the girl who brings in the most new members, I shall give a prize.
Oh, a prize?
Yes.
My goody.
Oh, what kind of a prize?
Will it be?
Well, I'll leave it to you girls. What do you think would make a nice prize?
Two tickets to the Sinatra program.
Aggie, this is treason.
I didn't mean it, Wealthy. It just slipped out.
Well, I knew I could count on you, Aggie. I shall favor you with a pat on the back. All the same, Aggie, you ought to be punished. On your way home, I'm going to ask you to write five times on every building you pass, Orson Welles, I love you. And don't sign my name to it. Well, girls, there's only a few of you, but I'm sure you're happier shrieking over me than you ever were shrieking for Sinatra, aren't you?
Yeah, but Frankie, don't twist our arm.
Aggie?
Orson's cute, isn't he? Huh? Yeah.
That's right, Aggie. I guess all of you girls have seen that wonderful picture, haven't you? That wonderful picture that's playing now, the one with Joan Fontaine in it.
Oh, yes, well,
dozens of times.
Dozens?
What picture is that?
Come, Aggie.
I just can't remember the name.
Oh, try. Force yourself.
Let's see. Joan Fontaine and, hey, was the fellow who played opposite her Solid Murder?
He was terrific. You remember the name now, don't you?
Why, sure. Charles Boyer in The Constant Nymph.
Aggie.
It just slipped out.
Well, goodbye, Wilson.
Hey, girls. My show goes on in a minute. Aren't you coming in to hear the program?
We're going to the Palladium.
Aggie.
To watch the dancers, please.
You know, Wilson. Those rum cutters and shaggers and Lindy Hopper.
I get a big kick out of a hopper.
I get a big kick out of a hopper. Head a hopper.
Gee, I know.
In her column, she said your program didn't get any laughs.
Yeah,
maybe I ought to wear one of her hats.
Isn't he cute?
Huh?
Yeah.
Thanks, Aggie.
Oh, Mr. Welles.
I know, Sonny. I'm due on the air. Goodbye, girls.
This is important, Mr. Welles. Cover a mistake in the Einstein theory.
Well, girls, I'd like you to meet a member of our research staff.
He's just a kid.
Well, he's only 9 years old, but he works on our program. This is little Noel Bupperman.
How do you do, young ladies? Did you know that Einstein claims the proportion of variation in cosmic displacement can be ascertained by the formula N7th plus 2TN divided by infinity cubed times LS, MFT?
Really?
Did he get any on him, huh?
Now, look, Noah, let's leave Einstein alone. What if he did make a little mistake? Who knows it but you and me?
But this is not a little mistake,
sir. Come on, Wellesley.
Forget your old program.
Mr. Wells, this is crucial. I've got something to ask you.
So have I, Wellesley. What are you doing tonight, huh?
Yeah, come on to the Palladium.
Yeah. We're busting a brawl, Esther. I don't know about these other chicks, but with me there won't be any infinity cubes. There'll be hamburgers, root beer, and necking.
Necking
is a colloquialism.
I know.
A colloquialism employed to describe many of the cornier aspects of lovemaking. It covers such tendernesses as kissing, caressing, and other forms of endearment of mutual entertainment value to both participants. Isn't that so, young lady?
Yeah. What are you doing tonight, huh?
Well, thank you for the invitation, but I'm past those carefree days. Since my 9th birthday, research has become very important to me. After all, scientifically considered, what is a kiss? Suppose, for example, one of you young ladies was to kiss me.
All right, there.
Now, my contention is... Sonny!
What's the matter, Sonny?
Oh, to be 7 again.
Where are you going, Noel?
Back to my study. Just me and my memories.
Mr. Wells, you're on the air.
Well, I've got to get on into the studio, but don't you take it too hard, Noel. After all, the whole world is ahead of you. You're young. Always remember, Sonny, you're living in a land of opportunity where anyone can grow up to be vice president. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the greatest musical combinations in America, the King Cole Trio, playing Hit That Jive Jack.
Hit that jive jack, put in pocket till I get back. I'm going downtown to see a man that ain't got time. Shake your hand. Hit that jive jack, put in your pocket till I get back. Time and time waits for a man that ain't got time. Shake your hand. Standing on the corner, all full of jives. But you know that you're a boy, and I always give you 5. Yada, yada. Hit that jive jack, put in your pocket till I get back. I'm going downtown to see a man that ain't got time. Shake your hand. Standing on
the corner, all full of jive. But you know that you're my boy, I'll always give you five. Hit that jive, Jack, put it in your pocket till I get back. I'm going downtown, see a man, and I ain't got time. Shake your hands, come on, put it in your pocket till I get back. Hit that jive, Jack.
You're listening to your radio almanac, ladies and gentlemen, and an almanac brings you a little bit of just about everything. Now, right here, for example, we bring you once again the housewife's guide and mentor, Prudence Pratt.
Peeling an onion underwater will prevent you from crying. It will also prevent you from breathing.
And, now our motorist's aid department, Mr. Jack Mather.
Brother drivers, how you doing on your mileage? Are you getting lots or little? Are you crowing or kicking? Well, look, next time you overhear somebody saying, "Do I get the miles?" follow that fellow. Drive in right behind him at the sign of the Flying Red Horse. Echo his order, mobile gas. Drive out and learn what mileage means. You'll clock off mile after mile for every gallon. Your speedometer will show you. Mobile gas is packed with every wartime mile it's possible to give you. 1944 mobile gas delivers all the mileage that you got from peacetime mobile gas. No gasoline can give you greater distance for each coupon. Try it driving to the war plant. Try it going into town. Try it in your truck or on your sales route. And you'll say, "Do I get the miles?" Absolutely, folks. From the Redwood Highway to Times Square, mobile gas is America's favorite gasoline. Prove why. Drive in to your mobile gas dealers. Honest, you'll come galloping back for more mobile gas.
Thank you, Mr. Mather. And Miss Pratt, I see you have something more for the ladies.
A new cork dropped into scorched gravy improves the taste of the gravy. New gravy on scorched cork will not improve the taste of the cork.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Prudence Pratt. Dr. Snake Oil?
If you rub it with wet starch, there'll be no discoloration on a bump. That bump I couldn't handle.
For the past few weeks, Miss Hedda Hopper, the noted Hollywood columnist, has been taking various assorted pot shots at your obedient servant, who has gallantly decided to extend the privileges of his program to Miss Hopper, aforesaid, to give her the chance to air her curious views before a larger audience. Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard Sinatra referred to as the voice. You've heard of Woolley the beard and Durante the nose. We bring you now Hedda Hopper the hat. Hedda, how does it feel to be on my program?
Well, I've read your script. See how shaky I am?
I've read your column. Look how shaky I am. Look, Hedda, I don't mind your knocking me, but I do object to your raving about that, a certain radio crooner.
What certain radio crooner?
Oh, I don't care to mention his name, but I'll give you his initials. Frank Sinatra.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear. Everybody thinks he's terrific. You know, a sailor friend of mine took his girl to see a Sinatra picture last night, and she swooned three times, once on account of the picture.
Oh, really?
Oh, darling, what they like about Sinatra is he's so effervescent and bubbly.
So is 7-Up. You get 2 cents back on the bottle.
Dear, the difference between you and Sinatra is he's not corny. In his pictures, when he proposes to the girl, he doesn't get down on his knees.
Of course not. He'd never be able to get up. You know, Hedda, I think you might revise your estimate of me if you'd see my new production, Jane Eyre.
I have.
Well, Joan Fontaine plays the title role.
Yes, and you play the part of Mr. Rochester.
How do you like me?
Well, the fellow Jack Benny's got plays it much better.
Hedda, it's common gossip. Why, everyone knows my studio is grooming me as their number one leading man and lover.
You mean they've given up on Sydney Greenstreet? Oh, let's face it, Orson. You've got as much romance as a salmon going downstream.
Yeah, but you ought to see me going up to spawn. Hedda, I just don't know how you can say I'm not romantic.
Well, in that picture, Jane Eyre, when you kissed Joan Fontaine, I didn't feel anything.
Maybe you were sitting too far back. You say you don't like me as a lover, Hedda. What do you suggest I do?
Well, frankly, I don't know, Orson. Why don't you change your name to Lassie and go home?
Hedda, it's easy to criticize, but let's have a constructive suggestion. Now, take this radio show. How can I make myself your favorite comedian, short of having you on every week as a guest star?
You know, I married a comedian, and I know how hard it is to be funny. You've got to have confidence, Orson. As you stand there by that microphone, you've got to keep saying to yourself, I'm the funniest man in the whole world. Go on, use your imagination.
Well, I've always felt it. I didn't need to be funny, you know. My lovable nature, my winsome little ways, ready smile, and my sweet personality are my bread and butter.
And what do you do for your meat and potatoes?
Hedda, just for the fun of it, name something you do like about me.
Well, I always enjoy it when you say obediently yours, because then it's all over.
Hedda, there must be something else.
Well, dear, you do read poetry divinely.
Oh, poetry. You mean like, breathes there a man with soul so dead who never turned around and said, not bad.
You see, that's what I mean. Those jokes of yours, oh, brother.
Oh, now, really?
Listen to that kind of a program.
Well, Hedda, here's a telephone book. I'll just pick a telephone number at random. Here's one. Now, let's see. Crestview 96970.
Hello?
I'm sorry to bother you, miss, but what radio program are you listening to?
Orson Welles, and he's wonderful.
Well, thank you.
And what time are you coming home, Orson?
10:00. Look, Hedda, let's not go on with this bickering. There's no reason on earth why we can't be the best of friends. We have so much in common. You know, really, Hedda, I remember when you started out, you're just not known then.
That's right. You too, Orson.
Yes, but you were quick to climb the ladder of success.
That's right. You too, Orson.
Finally, you became the greatest in your field.
That's right.
I said, Hedda, finally, you became the greatest in your field.
That's right.
Stop trying to think of a new line. Just read what I wrote on the paper. No kidding, Hedda. You remember those old days when we didn't have a nickel between us? We were almost starving, really, folks. One day in particular, a wintry afternoon it was, we met on a bench in Central Park. You were cold and hungry. I had a ham sandwich.
Yes, Orson, when you gave me that ham sandwich, you showed me what you were made of.
Hedda, before you go, you've really been so swell. It says here, I feel there's something I'd like to do for you. I'm casting a new picture of mine. There's really a wonderful partner for you.
Oh, well, it's very kind of you to think of me, dear, but I'm afraid you're too tall for me. It would be too much of a strain on my neck, darling, looking up at you.
Well, in pictures, dear, there's an easy way to fix that. For instance, you could stand on a box, and then you could look right into my face.
Better still, I might stand on your face and look right into the box.
Well, seriously, Hedda, this part, honest to goodness, is really great for you. You're just the type for it, a perfect type. Now, just wait until you get your teeth into it. It's a real academy of material. Now, here's your scene. You and I have been lovers, see? Yeah.
Good.
We've been parted. You return, thank you. You stand there looking at me. I speak first. My treasure, my own one, my beloved, you've come back to me at last. The years have separated us, years of sorrow and heartache. Tell me this much. Are you all right? Are you? Are you? No, don't speak. Just let me look at you.
What a picture you make there under the apple tree, the sunlight weaving its golden shuttle through your hair. The breath of spring blushing in your cheek. You've been away too long, darling. Tell me, did you miss me? Did you? Did you? You don't have to tell me. I can see it in your eyes. Those eyes that speak so eloquently to me of passion. Oh, darling, 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 take me in your arms as you used to. Take me. No, no, you look tired. You must rest. Darling, when I think of the songs, the spring times you and I have missed, the love words left unsaid, say them to me now, my darling. Say them. Say them.
Well, I...
I'm sorry, Hattie, you're not the type. We'll let you know if anything turns up. Hattie, really and truly, it's been great fun. I want to thank you sincerely for coming on the show. Really, truly. Everything from the heart. In spite of anything I've said, I really get a big kick out of your column. And please promise me that you'll visit us again, Luella. Hattie.
Well, at least I'm glad you like my column. Read it tomorrow, darling, and you'll really get a kick. Good night, dear.
Today, the makers of Mobil Gas opened a brand new TCC refinery, the newest plant to share in their vast $90 million program, the greatest catalytic cracking program in the world. The home of this refinery is Torrance, California. Today, right this minute, flowing from this new plant is a super gasoline, an aviation gasoline. Indirectly, it will deal a death blow to the enemy. From this refinery is being produced a sensational new super fuel. It's called flying horsepower, and it gives new power ingredients to 100-octane aviation gasoline. Flying horsepower means our planes will take off faster, climb much higher, go lots farther, and can carry heavier bomb loads. Flying horsepower gives an Allied pilot that vital edge when life's at stake, when the issue is, will his plane or the enemy's come home? Friends, we're humbly grateful we can make this contribution. And after peace rings out, the power ingredients of flying horsepower are coming to your car in Mobil Gas at the sign of the Flying Red Horse.
Your radio almanac brings you now a moral maxim. Few men have virtue to withstand the highest bidder. George Washington said that. Yesterday was his birthday. George Washington was the 8th president of the United States. A lot of you may not believe that, but he was. Look it up if you want to. George Washington was the 8th president of the United States. He was, however, the first president elected by popular vote. All the difference in the world is in those words. Popular vote. And just 12 years ago yesterday, Adolf Hitler became a German citizen. Just look what he's done for his country in 12 years. Now I'd like to read you a little story from a book called The Sword in the Stone by T.H. White, a fanciful account of the creation of the world. People often ask as an idle question whether the process of evolution began with a chicken or the egg. Was there an egg out of which the first chicken came, or did a chicken lay the first egg? Well, the first thing created was the egg. When God had manufactured all the eggs out of which the fishes and the serpents and the birds and the mammals and even the duck-billed platypus would eventually emerge, he called the embryos before him and saw that they were good. Perhaps I ought to explain that all embryos look very much the same. They're what you are before you were born. Whether you're going to be a tadpole or a peacock or a man, when you're an embryo, you just look like a peculiarly repulsive and helpless human being. Now, the embryos stood up in front of God with their feeble hands clasped politely over their stomachs and their heavy heads hanging down respectfully, and God addressed them. He said, "Now, look, you embryos, here you are all looking exactly the same. We're going to give you the choice of what you're going to be. When you grow up, you'll get bigger anyway, but we're pleased to grant you another gift as well. You may alter any parts of yourself into anything which you think would be useful to you in afterlife. For instance, at the moment you can't dig, anybody who'd like to turn his hands into a pair of spades or garden forks is allowed to do so. Or to put it another way, at present you can only use your mouths for eating with. Anybody who'd like to use his mouth as an offensive weapon can change it by asking and be a cock and drill or a saber-toothed tiger. Now then, step up and choose your tools. But remember, what you choose, you'll grow into and will have to stick to." All the embryos thought the matter over politely. Then, one by one, they stepped up before the eternal throne. They were allowed two or three specializations so that some chose to use their arms as flying machines and their mouths as weapons or crackers or drillers or spoons, while others selected to use their bodies as boats and their hands as oars. The asking and granting took up 2 long days. They were the fifth and sixth. At the very end of the sixth day, just before it was time to knock off for Sunday, they got through all the little embryos except one. This embryo was man. "Well, our little man," said God, "you've waited till the last, slept on your decision. We're sure you've been thinking hard all the time. What can we do for you?" "Please, God," said the embryo, "I think that you made me in the shape which I now have for reasons best known to yourselves, and that it might be rude to change. If I'm to have my choice, I'll stay just as I am. I won't alter any of the parts you gave me for other and doubtless inferior tools. I'll stay a defenseless embryo all my life, doing my best to make unto myself a few feeble implements out of wood, iron, and other materials which you've seen fit to put before me. If you want a boat, I'll endeavor to construct it out of trees, and if I should want to fly, I'll put together a chariot to do it for me. Probably I've been very silly in refusing to take advantage of your kind offer, but I've done my best to think it over carefully and now hope that the feeble decision of this small innocent will find favor with yourself." "Well done," exclaimed the Creator. "Here, all you embryos, come here with your beaks and whatnots. Look upon our first man. He's the only one who's guessed our riddle. Out of all of you, we have great pleasure in conferring upon him the order of dominion over the fowls of the air and the beasts of the earth and the fishes of the sea. Now, the rest of you, get along. Love, multiply. Time to knock off for the weekend. As for you, man, you'll be a naked tool all your life, though a user of tools. You'll look like an embryo till they bury you, but all others will be embryos before your might, eternally undeveloped. You'll always remain potential in our image, able to see some of our sorrows and to feel some of our joys. We're partly sorry for you, man, and partly happy, but always proud. Run along then, man. Do your best. And listen, man, before you go..." "Well?" asked Adam, turning back from his dismissal. "We were only going to say," said God shyly. "Well, we were just going to say, God bless you." Time to say goodnight now. I hope you'll join us next week. Until then, my sponsors, the makers of Mobil Gas and Mobil Oil, and all of us remain as always, obediently yours.
Our guests next week are Victor Moore and Kay Thompson, the makers of Mobil Gas and Mobil Oil. Invite you to join us then, same time, same station. Mr. Wells Lips and the Sword and the Stone by T.H. White, published by Portman. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.